WMKV 89.3 FM, with permission of WMUB-FM, Miami University Broadcasting, is proud to present the following hour-long historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Vic Spiderbeck.
This is Vix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and produced by Miami University Radio. Vix had left the Sioux City Six and his job with Charlie straight behind. He moved to Detroit to take up with the orchestra of Gene Goldkett, headquartered in the Greystone Ballroom. Vix had first been approached by Goldkett while he was still in New York with the Wolverines. The other members of Goldkett's troupe seemed to have been enthusiastic about Vix, looking forward to hearing his style. Paul Mertz, a pianist in the Goldkett organization, looks back to his first experience with Vix, to his memories of their first meeting and of the friendship that developed. Mertz presents his impressions of Vix. He was driven to his music, competent on both the cornet and piano, and well acquainted with the classics.
Vix Spiderbeck was the most stimulating musical personality I've ever met. He was an honest, sincere, friendly fellow. Unpretentious and humble, with a quaint sense of humor. Rather naive in many ways. And as for the romantic glamour bit, Vix wasn't much of a ladies' man. You know, the lover-boy type with a lot of affairs. Vix's greatest love affair had to do with a very demanding mistress. And that mistress was music. Characterizing him as a genius or an intellectual, personally, I never particularly cared for those terms. I sort of feel that Vix wouldn't have liked them either. He'd have probably been embarrassed and given you a sort of a quizzical look. As for myself, on the talent level, I like to think of Vix as a nonpareil creative stylist. Vix was contacted and induced to leave the Wolverines in October 1924 to join our band at the Greystone Ballroom in Detroit. And were we thrilled, especially in view of the fact that the Goldkett Band was scheduled to make its second series of recordings for Victor in November. And here we had Vix added to our lineup. This was something. Soon as Vix arrived in Detroit, Don got him settled in the Billinghurst Hotel, the roosting place of the Goldkett Band's bachelor contingent, which was Don, and Bill Rank, and Howdy Quicksell, and myself. Then, after a welcoming snort, we hauled him off to the Greystone Ballroom pronto for a preview jam session. Well, Vix came, Vix played, and Vix conquered. He was even greater than his records. After a while, the boys put down their instruments, and I moved over from the piano and let Vix get at it. And he played piano. How much talent can a man have? His style on piano was just as unique as his cornet playing. And we just sat there marveling at his ideas and amazed at his unorthodox way of maneuvering the piano keys, how he could make some of the jumps and stretches and untangle his fingers and hands in some of the licks. I couldn't figure, and I was a pianist too. He seldom used pedal, and any pianist knows that doesn't make it any easier when you try to mesh harmony. Finally, for a clincher, he played a classical number, Arabesque, by Debussy. the interpretation might not have made the grade at Carnegie Hall, but the Bix conception sure sounded fine to us. Bix loved that number, and he had laboriously worked it out, note by note and phrase by phrase, until he could play the whole piece through by ear. It's my considered opinion that this number, Arabesque, provided the musical seed which grew to flower later in his own piano compositions, the ones Bill Challis took down and edited like flashes in the dark and candlelights and so forth. From that day on, in October 1924, I became a Beiderbecke disciple. Well, just playing with him was enough to give you an education. But beside that, he was such a swell guy in the matter of giving you pointers. He never seemed to mind my pestering him to show me his singular piano playing patterns and formulations, his rhythmic and harmonic notions. He was so patient and accommodating. You might think I was doing him a favor. Also, like many others of his friends, I was introduced to the music of classical composers I hadn't really appreciated before. The impressionists, like Ravel, Debussy, and the neoclassicists, Stravinsky and Dukas, and so forth. I'll bet that around 2 o'clock in the morning at the old Billinghurst Hotel, to this day, there still lingers a ghostly echo of Bix's favorite symphonic work, Debussy's Afternoon of a Faun.
Thank you.
November 1924, Bix met with what was perhaps one of his greatest professional disappointments. His cornet style was passed over by the critics at the Victor Recording Company. In his place, Fuzzy Farrar took the cornet work on I Don't Know. A vivid picture of that occasion is unforgotten by Paul Mertz.
Bix came out there and joined us, and only stayed, though, a few weeks through the sad circumstance that the Victor Company didn't appreciate him in the recording end of it. We had one recording session while Bix was with us, and he was slated to do several solo choruses. And after the first one, Eddie King, who was the recording supervisor for Victor, sort of gave a very disgruntled look and said, I guess to Gene or to Charlie Horvath, whoever was at hand at the moment, he said, you know, he doesn't play the kind of jazz trumpet we and Victor Records want, and hate to disappoint him, but said, we just don't want anybody like that. We want the bussy type of jazz. And so the result was, Bix did make one chorus, or one master at least, was retained of the one tune that we started with him on, called I Didn't Know. But only on the condition that we make an alternate with Freddie Farrar, our fine first trumpet player, playing a hot chorus in a bussy style. And I wouldn't have bet on Bix's chance to be ever heard from a record from the Gold Kit Band after that. It was a tragic thing for us. You know, we were as wrapped up in Bix being a member of our band and showing us off. We were all agog about this, that Bix would be playing with us and the rest of the musical fraternity would hear him and we'd all partake of the glory that went along with it. And about Bix, what do you think about Bix? The guy was aghast when he was sort of eased out of the thing. And brokenhearted, here was his big chance with a big name band, big arrangement band as he had hoped to play with. And there went all his dream. I'll tell you, we consoled him plenty that night. We headed for Mac's bar and loaded aboard and commiserated with him. Well, Bix left shortly after that, during the Christmas season. Ostensibly, he was going home for the Christmas holidays, but he didn't come back. I just remembered there's one thing I forgot. That number, I Didn't Know, that was mastered. And the master was the one that Bix made. It was tucked away in the vaults of Victor and forgotten until 1961, when somebody dug it out. It was brought out by Victor as a memorial album of Bix.
Notable on this recording from the old Victor master, besides the surface noise, is a lively 16-bar solo by Bix Beiderbecke. I Don't Know, with Bix on cornet, was cut on November 24, 1924. It sat unused for 37 years before it was released. Personnel on the record include Bill Rank and Tommy Dorsey on trombones, Bix and Ray Ludwig on cornet, Doc Riker, Jimmy Dorsey, and Don Murray on reeds, Joe Venuti on violin, Bill Krenz and Harold Fair on piano, Howdy Quicksell on banjo, Irish Henry on bass, and Charles Horvath on drums. ¶¶ Evidently, Bix needed something more to succeed in the Maine Gold Cat Orchestra. He spent the winter holidays at home in Iowa, but his disappointment over the lost record job didn't keep him from his music for long. In January, the Gold Cat men heard from Bix again.
When we said goodbye to Bix, there seemed slim chance that we of the Gold Cat band would ever be playing with him again. Happily, a few of us had this notion quashed quite soon. In early January 1925, he wrote Don Murray saying that he had landed a recording date for Jeanette Records at its Richmond, Indiana studios. It would be the first band under his own name, and he was going to call it Bix and His Rhythm Jugglers. Could Don line up certain of us Gold Cattians to record with him on January the 25th? Could he? Hell yes. January the 25th was a Monday, our day off at the Greystone Ballroom, so there was no problem there. Don, Tommy Dorsey, Howdy Quicksell, Tommy Gargano, and myself were the lucky ones to go. We recorded four numbers, of which only two were ever released, the classic Davenport Blues and Todlin Blues. Unfortunately for Howdy Quicksell, the banjoist, he wasn't present for either of these. He had missed his train, and he only arrived in time to record the last number, called No One Knows What It's All About. And never was a title more apt, since by that time, battle fatigue had set in, aided and abetted by too much priming with gin. A highlight of the day was meeting for the first time Bix's good friend, Hoagie Carmichael.
Hoagie Carmichael drove Bix to the familiar Richmond, Indiana recording studios. The Rhythm Jugglers, consisting of Bix, Tommy Dorsey on trombone, Don Murray on clarinet, Paul Mertz on piano, and Tony Gargano on drums, recorded four tunes. The most important to Bix and to his historians is Davenport Blues. This is the first time Bix led his own band for a recording, and it's the first time he recorded his own composition. Frank Powers notes the event this way.
Davenport Blues ranks as one of the great Vida Bix masterpieces of all times. The most notable thing about this is that Bix emerges triumphantly as a mature musician at this point, fairly aware of his abilities and his talents, playing almost with a triumphant quality, utilizing his influences from impressionistic music. Notable is early in the recording is a very fine whole tone break, part of the stock and trade of the impressionistic composers. The coda at the end is also beautifully conceived. Truly a great masterpiece, both in performance and composition.
Bix had come a long way from his first public appearance at Davenport High School. 1 week after the recording session with his own band, Bix left for the University of Iowa. Victor's rejection of his solo still rankled. Perhaps his ambition was being frustrated by his lack of formal education. The college record notes that Bix Beiderbecke entered the university as an unclassified student. On February 2, 1925, Bix enrolled for courses in English, ethics, theory of music, piano lessons, and music history, both romance and modern. On February 16th, Bix had the usual conference with his freshman advisor. An excerpt from the counselor's notes reads, "Ask to drop religion and take more music. Is not registered for military training, physical education, or freshman lectures. Was told to do so promptly." The next entry in the record is dated February 20th, 1925. It says simply, "Dropped from the university." Whether the frustration Bix might have felt at the advisor's conference caused him to leave the university, or whether the university asked him to withdraw, as the Lake Forest officials had, can only be guessed. Nonetheless, this was Bix's last attempt at formal education. Bix once again returned to Chicago, once again began to haunt the cafes and nightclubs. At the Paradise Cafe on the South Side, Bessie Smith was making an impression on the Windy City musicians. Her great blues singing delighted Bix. September of 1925 finally brought the call for which Bix had been waiting. Gene Goldkett had obtained a contract to provide a band for the Arcadia Ballroom in St. Louis. He chose Frankie Trombauer with a good saxophone and a level head for business to head the group. Bix was chosen as cornet player for the new band. At last he had a permanent post with a known organization. Paul Mertz talks about the call to St. Louis.
Bix's next time on the Goldkett scene was the summer of 1925. The Greystone Ballroom was closed for the summer, and the band was split up, part of it going to the Blue Lantern Pavilion at Island Lake, Michigan, and part to the Gene Goldkett Book Cadillac Hotel Band in Detroit. Bix filled in at Island Lake when Ray Ludwig took a vacation. I didn't see very much of Bix that summer because I was down there with the Gene Goldkett Book Cadillac Band. He didn't continue with Goldkett in the fall, but wound up later with Frank Trombauer and his Arcadia Ballroom Band in St. Louis.
And Bix's new boss, Frankie Trombauer, met him in St. Louis.
I met him at the train and got him situated in a hotel in St. Louis, and that started our association. We played the entire season there, and we just seemed to click right off. I mean, the things he played and the things he wanted to play matched what I was thinking, and as a result, we could play simultaneous choruses at any time, and they'd never clash. I think you have some examples of those choruses in some of the records where we'd toss a couple of bars back and forth. We were the first to ever do that. And contrary to the opinion of a lot of people, Bix assumed a great responsibility there. I made him the assistant leader, and lots of times when I couldn't be there, he'd handle the band, and he did a wonderful job. That's where we made the arrangement of Riverboat and Ostrich Walk, and those things originated in that band.
And so in St. Louis, a new phase of Bix Beiderbecke's musical development began. This is Bix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Consultants for the series were John Steiner, along with Joseph Campbell and Philip Evans. Commentary was recorded by Frank Powers. Continuity was written by Mary K. Fulton. Audio engineer, Michael J. McGuire. Bix was researched, produced, and directed by Jim Grover. This is Bill Utter speaking for Miami University Radio.
WMKV 89.3 FM, your home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all your favorite music from the 1920s through the 1940s, is proud to present another half-hour program from the historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Bix Beiderbecke.